Our first speaker is Ron DeMuth. Ron is the ninth of 12 children of a Catholic farm family. The DeMuth farm consisted of a large dairy herd, hogs, and 1,500 acres of hay, corn, soybeans, and oats. Ron's parents and three siblings are now gone. Ron attempted the University of Iowa, Northern Illinois University, and the University of Chicago, studying psychology and neurobiology. Ron spent 11 years teaching and performing neuroscience research at the University of Chicago, and left academia in 1998 to co-found a genetics company in Chicago. In 2002, Ron was recruited to San Diego to manage a biotech services company and a life science investment firm. Presently, Ron manages several life science and healthcare companies. Last year, he co-founded a new venture capital startup, investing in mobile healthcare service startups. Ron is married to Sylvia and lives in Encinitas, and Sylvia is a mathematician and educator who recently retired from Northwestern University after a successful career. Ron and Sylvia have been married for 25 years and enjoy a large and growing Midwestern and West Coast family. Ron has been a member of UUFSD since August 2018 and is presently a member of the Finance Committee. Please give Ron a warm welcome.
John and fellowship members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today on the As Time Goes By theme. I want to share a few beliefs I've developed over the course of my life so far, particularly focused on personal happiness and the roles that memory and recollection play in happiness. More explicitly, I claim that how we recall life events, and especially the emotional content and context of our recollections, have powerful influences on our happiness, unhappiness ratio, and that we can change the emotional polarity of our memories from negative to positive without neglecting the truth that some of our memories carry deep emotional pain or regret. We humans have a genuine superpower. We have the power to change our memories and their emotional content and meaning through purposeful recollection. This superpower enables us to change the emotional polarity of our memories from negative to positive. By consciously cultivating positive emotions during the process of recollection, we can liberate ourselves from the past traumas and bad memories that box us in, keep us stuck in our unhappy stories, and interfere with our ability to even imagine ourselves as happy. Dan Gilbert, a Harvard happiness researcher, points out that our expectations for happiness flow strongly out of our previous experiences. If we recall our memories in their negative context, we tend to accept unhappiness. On the other hand, Gilbert finds that if a choice is made to develop positive expectations about memories and recollections, then despite their sometimes painful or traumatic features, people will expect and experience greater happiness. Gilbert's findings make a lot of sense in view of memory research over the past 4 or 5 decades. A couple of relevant findings from that work are that we remember events more vividly if they have high emotional content. Memories aren't perfect and unchanging. Memories change over time. Memories change the most in the process of being actively recalled and recounted. Memories are susceptible to being influenced by outside suggestion, even suggestions about false events that never happened. And very importantly, the positive-negative emotional polarity of memories can be changed predictably by the positive or negative context of our recollections. One important conclusion from all this work is that memories are malleable and can be manipulated. We can purposefully and consciously change our memories, and especially the impact they have on our present state of happiness and our expectations for future happiness. You may ask, so why does any of this matter anyway? In A New Earth, Eckhart Tolle wrote, "The primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but the thought about it. Be aware of the thoughts you are thinking." For me, Tolle's insight restarted an introspective journey, the destination of which I thought I had already arrived at. I came to realize that the source of self-doubt I sometimes feel is really rooted in negative thoughts, with their origin in the reliving of bad memories, that is, my negative recollections. A lot of those thoughts don't even seem to be my own, but arise from messages I've absorbed from outside myself, parents, the media, and so on. Sorry. I came to understand that my memories and recollections are never unaltered eternal truths, but instead are malleable and can be purposefully changed. Over time, this self-awareness has allowed me to live more fully and happily in the present, engage more authentically with family and other people, and to look forward to the future with cheer and optimism. Call it what you choose: rational emotive therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, neuro-linguistic programming, mindfulness, or something else. I invite you to explore the possibilities for greater happiness and conviction that purposeful recollection can bring. Creating positive emotional polarity of memories through recollection can liberate us, help us become unstuck, heal from trauma, develop greater self-awareness, recognize, understand, and renegotiate our self-imposed limitations. Purposeful recollection can build our resilience toward current challenges and our appetite to realize our aspirations. Thank you for letting me share with you today.
Our next speaker is Chris Butler. Oh, I forgot to mention, many of you don't know, most of you probably don't know Ron because he's relatively recent, but he, on his own initiative, applied for and received a grant from FEMA for the fellowship to improve our security on campus, and we'll be seeing the results of that this year. So Ron, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Chris Butler. Chris and his family have been UUs for the past 21 years. UUFSD is his third fellowship. In the previous two fellowships, he served in a variety of positions, including several finance committees, endowment committees, budget committees, and a committee that was formed to allocate a recurring large annual gift. He also served on the selection committee that called former Minister Megan to become our settled minister. He is currently the chair of the UUFSD Finance Committee. Outside of his UU life, Chris has served on the board of directors of several private schools, a neighborhood architectural review board, the Police Civic Service Commission, and the mental health catchment area that covered 1/4 of the city of Denver. Professionally, Chris is the founder of a boutique management consulting firm that served Fortune 500 clients for 35 years in the area of culture change and organizational development. He has authored several books and numerous trade journal articles, as well as several proprietary measurement instruments. He is the father of four children and 2 grandchildren. He and his wife, Carol, live in Escondido. Please welcome Chris.
Thank you, John. Good morning. Slight correction to my bio. I did not father the grandchildren. Where'd the morning go? Where'd the day go? More recently, where'd the year go? How often do we say these kinds of things to ourselves and to others? Time passes so quickly. It seems to me just last month that I was 30 years old with a 70-pound backpack hiking through the Colorado wilderness at 10,000 feet above sea level. Then I looked in the mirror this morning, and that 30-year-old had aged. He developed jowls, lost a lot of hair. I actually started growing hair when I don't want to grow hair. And a lot of gray. As I look out at all of you, I see some gray. Excuse me, I'm overcoming a cold. Some shiny scalps, perhaps a few of us with support stockings. I have several messages today that summarize, albeit briefly, some of the lessons I've learned in my past 7-plus decades of life on this planet. I believe these lessons have helped me over the years to lead a calmer, more peaceful life. But let me start at the end, not the beginning. Gloria Steinem once said, "The truth shall set you free, but first it'll piss you off." The part of this truth that pisses me off is that no one in this room will be alive at the end of the century. I am most upset because that statement applies to me, which is quite personal. The rest of you, well, I have some empathy for you, but it isn't as personal as it is for me. See, I told you to piss you off. So what does this have to do with time passing by? Just about everything. The biggest tragedy humans face is not that we're going to die, for surely all of us will, but that for some of us, we never really live. Certainly not in the sense of fully experiencing, embracing life, complete with all the suffering and joys that life provides. I have 2 suggestions that I believe have helped me to live better. Neither is more important than the other, so the order in which I present these ideas doesn't imply priority. If you live in your head, stop doing that. What do I mean? Many of us who have trained and worked in the sciences, math, or other rigorous disciplines tend to live among our own thoughts. Most, if not all of you, know what I mean. This is the 3rd UU fellowship which I have belonged over the past 20-plus years. All of the fellowships, just like this one, are populated by very intelligent, well-educated women and men. Your doctors, lawyers, scientists, other professionals. I, like many of you, spent too much time in my head and not enough time in the here and now. I know it's current cliche to say we all need to be living, quote, in the moment, unquote, but how many of us enforce a mental discipline that requires us to be present? How do you know if you're living in the here and now rather than someplace in the past or future? Listen to your self-talk. What's self-talk, you say? The technical term is psychovocalization. It's the little voice in your head that is almost always going. It's talking to you all the time. Frequently, you don't even listen to it on a conscious level. A few of you just said to yourself, "What the hell is he talking about?" That's self-talk. It's very subtle, often unconscious, and while we are awake, almost always on. The more self-talk that isn't related to what you're doing at the moment, the less you are present. This is often the case with goal-oriented people. I mentioned at the beginning that I did a lot of backpacking in the Rocky Mountain wilderness as a younger man. I very rarely enjoyed the process of getting there. It was always the goal of getting to the campsite or getting over that particular ridgeline. I seldom stopped to just enjoy the beauty and wonder of the spectacular wilderness in which I was traveling. Over 14 years ago, my family and I moved from Santa Barbara to Seattle. This is not a move we wanted to make. We love Santa Barbara, our friends there, and the community we shared at the Unitarian Church there. We were forced to move there because my 8-year-old son developed a severe mental illness. He was diagnosed as bipolar, which fortunately for him and us was erroneous. We didn't know that at the time. There weren't really good child psychiatrists available to us there, and the closest pediatric psych hospital was in Los Angeles, over 2 hours away. So we moved to Seattle, where we were able to find the right kind of treatment for our son. Both Carol and I had demanding and successful careers. We loved our work. The intent was for me to continue consulting, but just do it locally. When living in Santa Barbara, I had to travel almost continuously to deal with the large corporate clients. There weren't any in Santa Barbara. The thought was that I would continue to consult in the Seattle metro area, rich in large corporations in need of the kind of consulting services I could provide. For a variety of reasons, that didn't happen. Carol was busy building a medical practice in one of the suburbs, and it logically felt to me to become Nicholas's caretaker. He began psychoanalysis shortly after he moved there. His analyst required us to meet with her weekly. She began to teach me how to relate to and understand my son. It required tremendous effort on my part. I fought the transition. But the bottom line was I had to stop living in my head and to be in the here and now for him. It was a 2-year struggle on my part. But I'll tell you now, the difference it has made in my life, my son's life, and the lives of my other loved ones has been profound. My next piece of advice is much shorter. A minister at our UU fellowship in Washington was giving a sermon on resentment. She's a very good speaker and a warm and caring woman. She worked full-time as a chaplain at Seattle's Children's Hospital and occasionally gave sermons at the fellowship. During her sermon, she uttered the following statement: "Forgiveness is giving up all hope of a better past." I know many of you have heard this before, but at the time, it struck me as incredibly profound and still does. I began to let go of so many resentments caused by my forced retirement, being forced to move to a place that was barely tolerable compared to the wonderful town of Santa Barbara and of all our friends there. That phrase gets repeated to me in my own head. I'm not living there, I just visit. At least several times a week. When I feel myself becoming resentful or spiteful or even some other petty emotion, I repeat it. It's almost impossible to stay angry with another person or situation if you truly believe you're never going to have a better past. How we live is so much more important than the fact we're going to die. I encourage you to live in the here and now and enjoy life's bountiful buffet. Thank you and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Chris. Our final speaker is someone that most of us know very well. Dr. Lisa Schaefer has spent her life thinking and acting globally and locally to save the planet and promote world peace, including at NASA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Scripps Institute of Oceanography, SAIC, and the City of Encinitas, where she served on the City Council for 4 years. Lisa and her husband, Steve Bartram, have been active members of UUFSD for 12 years. And she has served in many roles here at the fellowship, including serving on the board, the search committee that called Megan, fundraising, ushering, singing in the choir, welcoming, the worship committee, and as a worship associate. She commissioned and donated our chalice, which you see before you, which is why she was so interested in getting it lit. Lisa teaches business ethics at UC San Diego, and in her spare time is working to return accountability and compassion to government supporting organizations that work on refugee and immigration issues, racial justice, voter empowerment, and climate activism. She also happens to be a very good cook. Please welcome Lisa.
Good morning, Happy New Year. 30 years ago, I was 36, married, living in the Northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C. My daughter was 8. On a typical morning, I would put on a nice suit, pantyhose, heeled shoes, and coordinated jewelry. I fixed breakfast while cajoling my daughter to get ready for school. I'd take her to the before-school program at her elementary school and head to my office at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. My days were filled with meetings, supervisory duties, budgets, writing and reviewing reports and memos, negotiations, and keeping up with what was happening around the world. My first career was in international cooperation among the world's space agencies. At that time, I was also pursuing a PhD in public policy. I stressed about time. Getting to work on time, getting home in time to pick up Allison, dinner time, her bedtime, couples time, our bedtime. I stressed about all the international travel I was doing, departure and arrival times, meeting times, the time I was spending away from home. That's what it meant to be a career woman and a mother and a wife. I carried lots of baggage. Literally, my leather briefcase and my coach purse, my suitcase always ready with the travel necessities I never unpacked. And figuratively, all my insecurities about work, mothering, and marriage. 20 years ago, I declared my permanent residency to be California and put my Arlington, Virginia townhouse up for sale after 18 months of schlepping baggage across the country while I commuted between La Jolla and Washington. I was working for Scripps Institution of Oceanography, promoting collaboration among the world's oceanic research institutions. I was newly divorced, my daughter was in college, and I was trying to learn how to operate on California time. I was frequently told I was too East Coast, too type A, too focused on deadlines. Time at Scripps ranged from geologic time, like Jeff Severinghouse measures, to daily high and low tide times that determined when we could walk on the beach. No daycare worries, no school pickups. If I got home a bit later than planned, no big deal. I got over my thought that the weather's gonna be nice this weekend, I can work in my yard, because the weather's nice every weekend here. Over the last 20 years, I've been shedding baggage, literal and figurative. I no longer carry a briefcase or wear tailored suits. I rarely wear shoes with heels, or skirts for that matter. When I think of the panic I felt when it snowed and schools were closed, but my daughter's school was closed, but my office was open, I'm puzzled. For reasons I can't understand now, I believed it was absolutely essential that I get to work. And so I scrambled to find someone to watch my child so I could clear the snow from my car and my driveway and risk life and limb to get to the office. If it happened now, I'd just say, screw it, I'm staying home. Since then, I've had several more careers. I'm still a mother, and as a result of marriage number two, I'm the stepmother of 3 additional daughters. Both my parents have passed away, leaving my brothers and me as the oldest generation. In the last 15 years, time has been measured by family, college graduations, boyfriends and breakups, theirs, not mine, and one wedding. I mark time by when the YMCA has aerobics and Zumba classes and when Rachel Maddow comes on MSNBC. Time is measured by Sunday services, ministerial comings and goings, pledge campaigns, Dining for Dollars events. My professional career is tapering off as I'm now teaching part-time, 6 months of the year. Starting next week, for the next 6 months, time will be marked by my Tuesday and Thursday morning class schedule for business ethics and corporate social responsibility, aka Oxymoron 101, taught, and I don't make this up, in Wells Fargo Hall at UCSD. I have retired twice, obviously unsuccessfully. As I reflect on what has really changed, it's my focus. During my career phase, I was focused on myself. Time was measured by my achievements, how fast I got promotions, my child's school calendar and her development, the years of my marriage. As my perspective has evolved, informed quite a bit by my deepening involvement with Unitarian Universalism, the focus has softened and broadened. I now think less about myself as a solitary actor and more about connections, about community, about shared interests and common values. I've let go of the need to dress for success and fill out annual performance evaluations. I don't take classes for grades, even though I still like learning things. My career was activated by a desire to promote world peace and save the planet, so I've always had a grandiose external perspective. But now I'm investing my energy in supporting others who are working toward those goals. After 4 years as an elected official, now I write postcards to voters and support others who are willing to run and to serve. Progress is not always evident, and I look more to the prospects for future generations, and these days just halting the backsliding that our current administration is so actively implementing. So, as the next decade arrives, my immediate time horizon goes to November, beyond which I am hoping and praying for a happily ever after. Thank you.